that it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that they will be persuaded to say, yes, I am one of them too, I must have these things. And please help me to welcome Claire from Midtown.
Hi, group. I'm Claire. I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Claire.
And my sobriety date is June 29th of 2008. I have a sponsor who's been down here before, and I come down with her. And I have a home group, which is the Midtown group. I was just thinking, it's like the little things in life sometimes today that like get me and make me grateful. I was one of those things where that multiple people let me know that there's like 2 minutes before you have to get up and start speaking here. So I appreciate that. That was noted. And because someone like me like overthinks things and like is like, what am I doing? Like, where do I need to be? Like, how long do I have to think about what I'm going to do before I actually do it? You know, like, so thank you for taking care of me and creating an environment where I can feel comfortable to do exactly what you had just read, which is hopefully share my experience, strength, and hope. And to do nothing but tell you that, or hopefully show you that this thing works, you know. I'm like not a great speaker. It's like not my favorite thing to do, like one-on-one or in a crowd of people. My home group, it's in front of a lot more people, so I appreciate being here with you guys on a Sunday. Yeah, so like I said, I'm going to try and tell you guys in a general way what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. And you know, we were talking earlier a little bit about, you know, breaking up your talk and talking, you know, 15 minutes on, you know, what it was like and my alcoholism and how some people, you know, can talk for days about that. And in my experience is actually that I only drank for 2 years. And I felt really insecure about that when I got to AA, and I felt like, you know, I was different. And I know that, like, that's the alcoholic cry, but, like, I am different, guys. Like, don't you get it? But I'm not. You know what I mean? Like, my relationship to alcohol is exactly like what it's described in the book, you know? Regardless if I drink every day or not, regardless of what I drink, how long I drink, I mean, I cannot control and enjoy my drinking. And that was made clear to me, you know, very early on. You know, I started drinking in eighth grade. I don't remember how old I was, probably 13, 12, 13. And me and my friends were going to, like, try drinking. And like, their try drinking and my try drinking were two very different things. I was trying to get drunk, you know? I was trying to feel the effect produced by alcohol. And they just were kind of like, like, we're doing something bad. Like, this is so great. And I was like, like, from there, I kind of knew, like, something's not right with my relationship with alcohol. And so I did just that. I got drunk. Somewhere along the line, they decided, it was three of us girls, and they decided that we were going to split some wine between the three of us. And I, like, never drank before, didn't really understand, like, alcohol content or any of that, but I, like, knew that was, like, not enough for what I wanted to do. And we finished, you know, one or two bottles of wine, and I was feeling tipsy, but, like, that's not really, it wasn't really for me. And so she, like, my friend whose house we were at, she, like, offered me just, like, a bottle of liquor, and for whatever reason, I just, like, turned it up and started chugging. I don't know why. I don't know, like, I have no idea. But, you know, needless to say, I, like, blacked out, which I always thought was, like, the goal of drinking. I never knew that, like, you could, like, drink and have a good time and, like, not black out. I just didn't realize that wasn't the goal, because I liked blacking out, you know? It was kind of like, my mind was turned off, and I didn't have to think, because I'm, you know, an overthinker, about myself in particular. And blacking out, it was like a guaranteed, I don't have to worry about you or me or anything. And so, you know, I, like, somehow managed to not get any trouble that day. I, like, stumbled home at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and went to bed and woke up the next day, and everything was, like, totally fine. And, uh, And I didn't say from that minute on, like, I'm going to drink. Like, that's all I'm going to do. But, like, the actions that I started taking kind of showed that my relationship with alcohol was strange, you know? My friends started to change. My priorities started to change. You know, I was like, smart enough to, like, not really try, but get, like, A's and B's, you know? I was, like, good enough at sports to, like, try and do well or not try and be average, you know? And I just stopped trying at anything. So, like, all that kind of just, it, like, maintained, but I wasn't getting anywhere that I wanted to anymore. And my relationship with my family was strained pretty quickly because, my parents didn't want their, like, 13-year-old daughter getting drunk and high all the time, which I felt like was rude. And I was very upset with them. Like, I say that lightly, but I was, like, very resentful at my parents when I got here because they wouldn't let me drink the way that I needed to drink, and they didn't understand. And I didn't realize it was that simple or that surrounded by alcohol or my relationship with alcohol. But, my parents were the ones that stood in the way of me and my relief, and they got the brunt of a lot of the evidence that, you know, alcohol was my master, you know, that it was king alcohol. And so by 15, grade 10, I had nothing going for me. You know, I had skipped enough school to not get any credit in the semester prior. Because, and this is the thing, like, I love school. School is, like, where you got the connection. Like, school is, like, my only social opportunity. But what would happen is that school hours was, like, prime drinking hours for me because that's when my parents were the furthest away from me physically. And I knew that if they found anything out, I would at least have time to, like, do what I wanted to do and then face the consequences, you know? So I had, like, it's crazy how, like, calculated I was when I was drinking and the lengths I would go to protect my time to drink or protect the fact that I needed to drink or, you know, just protect my friends, like, that were supplying me with, you know, like, I made up aliases for my friends so that my mom couldn't track who I was going out with. And it was actually pretty sad. I, like, found it, like, few years later, after I got out of rehab, I, like, found this, like, chart that my mom made of, like, who she thought people really were, the names that I gave her, like, the potential numbers of their parents or also the numbers of my friends that were, like, covering and pretending to be their parents. Like, it was nuts. All to say, like, it just really represented well, like, how much I needed to drink. And I had to, like, create these elaborate schemes just so that I could get enough freedom. Even if I knew that I was going to be caught, I would at least have that hour or so of my mom trying to figure out what was going on for me to get ahead. My parents were concerned, obviously. And that kind of started the cycle of Claire going to treatment and Claire seeing professionals. We started light. We started in family therapy, and the therapist quickly realized, like, Claire was the problem, you know? Like, it wasn't, like, a family issue. It was, like, a definitely Claire issue. I started kind of getting more separated from alcohol just because of my circumstances, and what ended up happening is that this, like, loneliness and despair would creep in, and I would get, you know, the easiest word is just not clinically, but just, like, depressed. And so I would say things to my parents, like, you know, I'm okay if I don't continue to live. And my parents would ask me about school and, like, why don't you care? Like, what's going on? And I'd be like, do you really think that I'm going to make it past whatever age to, like, for school to even be an issue? So, you know, that I broke my parents' heart a few times, and they were pretty scared. And it was so crazy that I they didn't understand me. I just felt like, why can't you understand the, like, soul sickness? I didn't know there was a soul sickness, but why can't you understand where I'm coming from? And I knew that there was something wrong with me and that nobody seemed to have it besides me. And I felt, you know, 15, very alone in the world. But I knew, and this is why I like desperately protected alcohol, I knew that alcohol would give me that relief. You know, I knew that if nothing else, alcohol could allow me to just be where I was at, wherever I was. And yet, and I had not found anything like that. Drugs, but alcohol was really it. And so my parents started sending me to, psych wards. And there was kind of the first time that I was, like, really introduced to AA. Before that, the only introduction to AA I had or thing I knew about AA was that my grandmother was in it. And all I saw was her and her, like, 70, 80-year-old friends, like, sitting in a circle, like, eating bonbons, and I was like, I don't think AA is for me. Like, that's definitely, like, not a solution for whatever I have. And in this, I think it was Washington and Venice Hospital, people would bring in meetings, and I kind of liked it. I mean, I thought the stories were cool, and I thought they were wild. And I also kind of, like, this is, like, the one terrible thing about AA. It's, like, I've learned so much, like, so many bad things to do and, like, how to use things and, like, what to drink in AA. And I liked that part early on because I was, like, well, if I ever go back out, now I know how to really party, you know. And I like that, but, like, me and my, like, psych ward friends would, like, kind of, like, laugh and giggle and make fun of them, even though we were in the psych ward, and they were, like, gonna go home and, like, do whatever. I didn't take it seriously. There was just something in me that just felt like I'm not done, if anything. Like, yeah, maybe I am an alcoholic, or maybe I have a problem with drugs and alcohol, but, like, I'm 15, guys. Like, am I really gonna do anything different? And I also somehow, even though this wasn't the truth, I felt like I had more to lose. You know, because people would talk about, you know, losing their families and, like, losing their house and their car and their kids. I think three of those things I just mentioned I didn't even have. But I, like, hadn't quite lost my family because, I mean, I knew they would never give up on me. So I was just like, I mean, I'll go as much as I can. Anyway, I don't know if that made sense, but so, you know, it kind of, my last 6 months of drinking were kind of this cycle of me saying something wild to my parents, them trying to institutionalize me, and me getting out and kind of, like, laughing at them, thinking that they can't stop me, but also knowing that, like, I need some help, but I don't know what to do. And my parents finally kind of, like, pulled the trump card, and they sent me to this long-term treatment for 30 months. That is 3-0. That is 2.5 years. That is my full 16th year, 17th year, and part of my 18th year. And thank God, it was a boarding school based off the 12 steps of AA. Some of the speakers that you guys have had have also been there. I mean, it was terrible, but it was like, it did two very important things to my sobriety now, which I didn't realize at the time. And that was, one, it introduced me to a power greater than myself. You know, we had no connection to the outside world. Like, I couldn't talk to my friends. I didn't know what was going on, like, music, TV, who was winning the Super Bowl, none of that. And I mean, I had nothing else but to search for a power greater than myself. And the other thing that it did, was that, every, like, 6 months, my home group now, the Midtown group, would drive, you know, they'd all come in cars, maybe, like, 30 of them would come up, and, for the weekend, out of their own time, their own pockets, they would come up and they would talk about their experience, strength, and hope in AA. And they would talk about their experience drinking, what happened on their journey to get them to AA, and, you know, what happened in AA and what life was like for them now. And for the first time, because of them, AA looked really attractive. And AA, or being an alcoholic, looked like a real option for me. I thought, like, I kind of, like, started getting the me toos, and I'm like, yeah, me too, like, I've done that before, like, I totally understand that thinking. And they, you know, talked about, you know, their relationship to alcohol and the obsession of the mind and the lengths they would go to also to protect their drinking. And I just felt like, okay, like, maybe I could check out an AA meeting when I leave here. And, like, for real. But the problem with that was that they only came up every 6 months. And 6 months without, like, being in the program, even, I mean, today, like, my mind changed, you know? And I started to convince myself that I didn't need you guys. And that AA was kind of a sham. I mean, those young people are probably getting paid. Like, who knows? Like, and just making up plenty of excuses as to why I didn't belong with you guys. And the what happened part of my story is that as I was leaving that place after two and a half years, this guy that had graduated, you know, maybe a year before me, that also was now part of the Midtown group, was up at graduation, and as my parents were pulling out of the car. Pulling out of the parking lot, he came up and knocked on my parents' window and said, "Hey, I know you're coming to the D.C., Virginia, Maryland area. Like, do you have a plan? What's your plan?" Like, and I had no plan, you know? Like, I got, like, a BS sponsor so that I could leave. I, like, wrote this long, elaborate plan that I wasn't planning on following. Like, I'm not going to smoke, I'm not going to get tattoos, just so I could, like, leave and they could, like, let me be free. But I really had no intention of going to AA because, like I said, my mind had changed, and I didn't think that I needed it. And luckily for me, you know, I didn't actually have any plans. So when he proposed the idea of, like, come to a meeting with us, I said, sure, like, why not? Let me check it out. Like, I'm not going to be a jerk about it. I've just spent 2.5 years in basically a rehab facility. Like, I might as well check out AA. Like, it kind of makes sense. And if nothing else, I can just say that I get it. And so, you know, I always think, you know, people talk about, like, seconds and inches here. And I think about if Luke is his name, the guy that knocked on my parents' window, like, imagine if he hadn't done that, you know what I mean, how easily it would have been for him to be like, I mean, any number of things, oh, she's a girl will take care of it, you know, oh, I don't know her that well, like, she'll be fine, you know, even with, like, the best of intentions, if the hand of AA and the hand of God wasn't there, like, where would I be at today? So I try and keep that in mind today, you know? Like, one of the biggest things I have now is, like, you know, now that I have a couple years sober, I'm like, no, like, 15-year-old girl wants to talk to, like, a loser, like, old person like me, you know? Like, which is not true. Like, but I think that, you know, or I think that I don't have anything good to say, or that I don't talk well, or whatever. Like, there's plenty of excuses I can give myself why I shouldn't have my hand stretched. But I have learned that it is my responsibility, you know? And if I'm going to stay sober, I have to do it. And so I got sidetracked. So I went with him to Midtown. Midtown was my first meeting. Has anyone been to Midtown before? It's terrible. At the time, there was like 400 young people there, which, like, I mean, I had been going to, they, like, let us out of treatment for a night to go to, like, meetings here and there at my treatment. And it was, like, maybe 10 people. Most of them were men. Most of them were probably 30 or above. So going to a meeting of 400 young people was, like, oh, God, it was just terrible. It was just the worst. I'm so grateful that I fell in that group, because it was just like, it was like hustling and bustling, and like everybody was moving, and like everybody was doing service, and like everybody was talking about AA and being sober, and like there was this excitement, and just like this excitement to be alive, which is something that I had not experienced in a really long time. I didn't really understand why people were so pumped up about life. I seen, you know, people talk about, like, missing the handbook. I just seem to, like, miss everything, you know? I just could only be so happy without alcohol. I could only be so happy without, like, stealing or getting mine or just, like, with serving Claire, you know? And these people were doing none of that, and they were thrilled to be alive and to, like, help other people. And so I kind of got swept up in the fellowship, and I'm really grateful that I did. You know, I didn't do a whole lot in terms of, like, actual step work in the 12-step program. But, and so what happened was that since I wasn't, you know, working on the steps, I started to think that I didn't have alcoholism. Like I said, I'd only drank for a couple of years. I didn't hear my story for a really long time, and I thought that meant that I didn't belong here. And I was really probably just listening to the wrong things. I was listening to people's circumstances, and I know that that's an important part of sharing our story, but I think also my relationship to alcohol was really important, and that's what I was failing to listen to. And of course, I wasn't honest about any of this. I hadn't, like, learned about the whole honesty part of the program. And so I made a deal with myself, and I just thought, maybe we'll try this thing on our own. Like, I get that, like, AA or alcohol might be a problem. Drugs are obviously a problem. Like, weed might be fine, but, like, everything else, probably not. But I was like, I'm just going to try for, like, a year or so to just, like, do it on my own. But, like, this AA stuff is kind of lame. And so I tried that. And within a matter of months, I became well aware of the knowledge of my alcoholism and the nature of my alcoholism, and that my my problem is not necessarily a drinking problem, it's a living problem, and I need a spiritual solution to whatever I have, and that I discovered that I didn't know how to live without alcohol, but I didn't know how to live with it either. And I didn't know it, but I found myself at the jumping off point that it talks about in the big book. And I also discovered in the big book, I really wish I had, you know, read it when I got here, or read it with my sponsor, more importantly. But you know how it talks about, like, if you aren't sure if you're an alcoholic or not, you can step over to the bar and try some controlled drinking. I knew that, like, wasn't an option because I didn't want to drink with control. You know, like, that just seemed pointless. But I didn't think that meant I was an alcoholic. But it also says, like, a couple of pages later, if you don't think you're an alcoholic, try living sober without AA and see where it gets you. And that is the way that I became convinced of the nature of my illness. And the kind of what happened part two of my story. This is kind of like, it's such a, while I get nervous and anxious up here speaking, I do like the fact that this, talking about my story, always reminds me of the amount of God that has happened for me to get to where I am today. You know what I mean? Like, for example, Luke reaching out his hand to get me to my first meeting. And then the second part of my what happened, the school that I went to every 6 months had graduations. And I had broken the traditions and went back and talked about how I was in AA, and they printed it on their, like, monthly, like, rehab newspaper. And one of the students saw it and saw that I was sober and was going to Midtown and was moving to the area. So she contacted me to see if I could get her to a meeting. And I tell you, like, for, like, 2 or 3 months before that, I had told myself that I was going to get to a meeting in the morning, and by the evening, I convinced myself that I didn't need to go anymore. And then, you know, the meeting time would go by, and then I'd be thinking about drinking until I fell asleep at, like, 4 a.m., you know? And I could not get myself back to a meeting for whatever reason. And this girl hit me up and said, hey, like, I really need to get to a meeting, like, I don't know anybody, like, can you help me? I know that you're connected. And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever, like, whatever I can do to help. And I'm thankful that my pride was, like, there to just kind of take, you know, whatever. I got back because I didn't want to look bad to her, but I also got back because I don't think there was any way that I could have gotten back on my own. And so I started going to meetings again. And while my experience not in AA was really painful, it gave me the surrender that I needed to start the steps and start working with a sponsor. And I knew, I mean, I had 1, 2, and 3 down, you know. I knew I can't, he can, I'll let him, you know. And my third step was mainly just, like, doing literally whatever my sponsor said, like, being honest with my sponsor about what I was actually doing. I followed my group. Like, whatever was going on in the group, I was doing. If we were going to the beaches every weekend, I was going to the beach every weekend. If we were going to conferences, if my speaker or my sponsor was speaking down here, like, I was there, you know? Like, I just let my feet move and, like, my brain and my heart just, like, catch up, unfortunately, like, years later. But they caught up, you know? And I really just, like, did whatever you guys told me to do. And I'm so grateful that, like, I had the surrender for, like, an extended period of time. My ego didn't really build itself, I take that back, it built itself up, but not in the part where I felt like I didn't need you guys, at least, like, I felt like this was my only option, you know, like, because I had tried not drinking and not going to meetings, I had tried drinking, like, the only other option was to go to meetings and not drink, you know, and so, my sponsor kind of we met a lot, and I'm so grateful that she took me through the book, because like I mentioned, I found myself in the book. I found my sickness in the book. I found the relationship with alcohol. Like I talked about, I didn't think I was alcoholic because I thought, you know, the longevity of my drinking or what I drank or whatever had to do with my alcoholism, and it doesn't. It doesn't say any of that in the book, you know? It does say, though, like, that when I start, I don't know what's going to happen. And that doesn't mean I get drunk every time, because that wasn't my experience either. Like, I definitely wanted to, but since I was young, sometimes we ran out of alcohol and couldn't get any more. But I didn't know what was going to happen. And then when I tried to stop, like, I always ended up drinking again. And for me, what that looked like is, I was an athlete, so, like, I really tried to, like, control my alcoholism during seasons. I was a 3-season athlete, so I didn't leave, like, a whole lot of time. But, like, every season, at the start of every season, I would tell myself that I'm not going to drink during the season. And I would last maybe a week and start drinking. You know what I mean? And it wasn't like there was a fight. That was the craziest part, was, like, I had convinced myself, I didn't even have to convince myself. It just was like, drinking seemed like a good option. Like, I just got there. After all this experience that, like, I don't do well with drinking, I always convinced myself that drinking is an option and drinking is the better option. And that remains true for me today. You know, I haven't had a drink in my system since I was 15, and I just turned 30, you know? And despite that, I can still convince myself, despite 15 years of evidence, that not drinking is a good idea, and then a couple of years of drinking is not a good idea, like, I still think that drinking is a good idea. I don't know if I said that right, did I? Okay. Which, like, when you say that out loud, is nuts. It's insane, you know? But, like, man, I can, like, really go there in my own head, which, like I said, like, being around, surrounded by alcoholics, like, these young alcoholics, like, I don't think I was, like, even out of touch with an alcoholic for, like, the first couple of years of sobriety. You know, like, if I was, like, home asleep was about the only time they were not around. My sponsor, like I said, started taking me through the book, and the real testament of, like, doing the steps for me was starting a fourth step. It's funny that people are kind of, like, nervous about doing the fourth step, because in rehab, I had to write, like, a fourth step-esque thing and then read it to my parents. So, like, the fourth and the fifth step were, like, piece of cake. Like, I can do that, you know what I mean? Or so I thought. It was not. But I wasn't nervous about doing it, is what I'm trying to say. But I also didn't really understand it at the same time. Like, I could do the first two columns. Like, I could tell you for the resentment list, I could tell you, like, who I was mad at and why I was mad at them. Beyond that, like, you lost me, you know? Like, I never took responsibility for my own actions. And this is what the fourth step was trying to do, you know, trying to see how I relate to the world. And that was just not something I was looking at. And thank God for the women in AA, because they would, like, sit with me and, like, give me examples of, like, you know, I'm mad at this person, here's why, like, this is what it affected, and I'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, me too, like, I can get that, and I, like, write it down, and then I, like, be stuck on, like, this is, like, the person that hurt me and why they hurt me. But, I mean, they walked me through it, and it was the best job I could have done at the time. But really, the fourth step for me, when it really shined a light on, was my fears. You probably can't tell now, but I thought I was, like, a tough guy when I was younger. I was, like, a little gang member. I was really just, like, a hoodlum, and I was, like, annoying and just a nuisance. But I thought I was tough, and I really, like, held to that. And I tried to dress like it, and I tried to speak like it. And I started writing my fears list, and that was long, you know? And like most people, started with, like, the spiders in my basement, or with the lights off, or, you know, silly stuff. And then it, you know, quickly escalated to, like, I'm afraid to be alone. I'm afraid that I'm never going to be loved. I'm afraid that, like, everyone is being nice to my face and laughing behind my back, or that, you know, the truth isn't really what I think it is, and that, you know, all of it surrounded by this thing of I'm not going to be loved and I'm going to be alone, and it's just going to be me against the world for the rest of my life. And that was kind of a shocker. Like I said, I was a tough guy, and I didn't think that I needed anybody in my life, and that kind of started this shift of Claire realizing, like, oh, I can't do this thing alone. Like really, I'm not going to do well if I try and do this thing on my own. And for the first time, I kind of felt like, after doing my fourth step, I hadn't yet done my fifth step, but I felt, like, on track for some reason. I had all this evidence about my life that I had never had before, and I finally felt like, huh, this might be a solution to what I've been feeling this whole time. And when I went over it with my sponsor, she just, like, nodded her head and said, like, yeah, I've done that before. Actually, before I even spoke, she talked about some of the things that were on her resentment list and her fears and sex inventory and dishonesty list or secrets. And they were, like, some of the things she, like, spit out were, like, the things that were on my list that I was, like, so nervous to talk about. And she said it so, like, effortlessly, and, like, I didn't judge her, so I knew that the things that I was about to talk to her about, she was not going to judge me for. Mm-hmm. And it opened, you know, this now 12-year relationship of being able to be honest with her. And I'm so grateful that I had that experience, because where that put me at the end of my fifth step, after I told her all this stuff, it put me in a position where, like I said, I felt like I was exactly where I needed to be. And that was, like, the first time in my life, you know what I mean? I had always felt like I was just wrong, you know what I mean? Like, I felt like I was always brushing up against the world, or, like, I wanted more money, I wanted less money, I wanted my parents to be this way, or, like, nothing was ever just satisfactory in life. And for the first time, it felt like it was okay to be me, and it was okay with you to be me, which isn't that important, but it was to me at the time, you know? So I just felt like me and God were finally on the same, like, the same, what's the word I'm looking for?
Wavelength.
Yes, exactly. Perfect. Thank you. Wavelength, in case the microphone didn't pick it up. And you would think that would have, like, jolted me into 6 and 7. It did not. I lived effectively for a good number of years. Like any, you know, I was 18 at the time. I kind of like give myself a little bit of credit here. Like I was wild and young and free, and hey, like the best I was gonna do was sober. By golly, let's do it. And I am grateful though that my sponsor suggested. Required. We'll say suggestion, but I think it was required. That I live differently in my relationships very early on, especially with my family. I don't know if I mentioned this earlier. I did, that my grandmother was an AA. But she also lived with me and my family during my drinking. And I mean, we probably had, you know, a few conversations in the 4 years that she had lived with us. And I had no idea that, like, she just was even an option to have a relationship with, to be honest. And so, you know, my dad, me and my grandmother would go out every week to dinner to kind of start my amends process. And this was like early on in sobriety before I did my fourth, my fifth, whatever, any of it. I just started being a part of the family because I had really, I can't see anyone anymore. I'm going to go back on. I really robbed my parents of any sort of relationship, any possibility of them being proud of me. I mean, I just like, I don't know. I'm just like, the only option they had was to worry about me. And I started changing that, you know, when I went back to school and started doing well, but also when I just like let them in my life, you know, like I was so on guard around the people that loved me, because I knew if they knew what was really going on, they were going to be terrified. And so I finally started, you know, my dad was like meeting all of my AA friends, and he loves AA. He thinks the Midtown group specifically, but just like in AA in general, because his mom got sober, is like, I mean, he just can't say enough things about AA. But you know, really, not all that to say is the relationship just start, like slowly started to change by taking like different action, you know, just by like being there, which was nuts. It's kind of sad how little was expected of me or needed of me for things to be good, you know. My parents just wanted a phone call, you know what I mean, that I was alive. My parents just wanted like, you got your credit in your school, great. Like they didn't even care if I got a good grade. They were just like, our money wasn't wasted, awesome. And so, you know, that kind of, my sponsor, we did an eighth step, and you know, it was important for me to see that the way that I responded to people was like, it was so unnecessary. You know what I mean? Like, because all we did, we made these flashcards from my fourth step, and we would put on, you know, my harms, and then just the name and my harms, and just to see like how harsh I was with the world around me was like really eye-opening. And it was important for me to see that like nothing that the people around me did warranted the way that I behaved, you know? And so I started that process, but it didn't really hit me. What hit me was like when I finally started to be different, I noticed how terrible I was, if that makes any sense. For example, I started having conversations with my grandmother in the time that we would spend together, and I would think to myself, why have I never heard these stories before? You know, my mom or my grandmother has an awesome life. You know, she grew up in Brooklyn, had a couple sisters, like, it was nuts, like, married this guy who, like, whisked her away. They traveled all over the army, and then she also, like, had this, like, horrible relationship with alcohol and was, like, a drop-down drunk and, like, you know, showed up to my dad's drunk and embarrassed, and just, like, and then got sober and was sober for 50 years, you know, and was, like, sober in this really active group that's still sober today up in New Jersey, and was, like, the treasurer there for, like, 30 years, but, like, whatever. I know that's not, like, the spirit of rotation, but she knew that and didn't care either, so I don't care. But I would think to myself, like, why don't I know anything about this person that I've lived with for however many years? And it was because I never took the time to talk to her. I only ever saw her as an obstacle for me getting my alcohol, you know? And I couldn't remember, and she would talk about, getting calls from school when I missed school. And I didn't even think about that because my grandmother was the one that was home when I was, out drinking, and she would get the calls and have to tell my parents about them, or she would check on me at night and I wouldn't be there. It'd be 3 a.m. in the morning and I wouldn't be in my room, and she wouldn't tell my parents. She would just hope that, I was okay. And so I only got those opportunities to learn about the effect that I had on her through talking to her and being different. And I think she was alive. She died at the age of 98. And I got many, many years, thanks to my sponsor, of living differently for us to cultivate this incredible relationship. And at the same time, my mom had left. And my grandmother basically became my mother. And none of that would have been possible without AA, and I relied on my grandmother as much as she relied on me. When she was dying, it was like a really long process, unfortunately, and there was like some things that had to be done that were, if any of you guys have taken care of people while they're passing, is like, it's invasive, it can be embarrassing for them, and I was the only female in the house, and she didn't want her son to have to do it, so I was able to do it, and she felt much more comfortable with me because of the relationship we had doing those things for her and helping her pass away with dignity. That one amends alone has like shifted my insides, and that relationship has made like life worth it, and now I understand, because of like my relationship with my grandma, what this whole thing is about, like this whole life thing, being like the joy that you get being able to like touch favorably on other people's lives is amazing, like who knew? My dad is like a big part of my life. I've been having, at least my dad calls him Hangs, because I used to call him Hangs in sorority. Anyway, so me and my dad like hang once or twice a week. We have for almost every single week of my sobriety. My dad's had a really shitty life, and I've been the only one that's been able to show up for him, Sorry, I just realized I'm not supposed to be cursing. I don't know how much I have cursed, but you guys don't seem to mind, but I'm so sorry. I've been able to show up for my dad, and he has lost everyone in his family. Me and my brother are the only ones that are around, and I'll talk a little bit about my brother, but I'm all my dad has, And I wouldn't trade that for the world, but I know, and he knows, that that's only because of AA. There's no possible way that I can show up for my family the way that I have without you guys. You guys have taught me about love and service and showing up when I don't want to, and showing up when it's hard. I remember we have this like meeting on Mondays to talk about the promises. And people would talk about these amazing men's stories, and it seemed like they always talked about the good things and about, like, the easier things. But, like, I've had to like, do a lot of hard things with my family, We've had, like, a lot of people die, or a lot of people. My brother right now is struggling with addiction. And I'm so grateful that I have had the strength, because of you guys, to walk my family through those things, Because we have walked through them together here, Like, we have seen people, I was looking at your list, come in and out of AA, maybe not make it. I have done that here with you guys, and that has allowed me the strength to do it with my family. And I don't think that I'm, like, supposed to be sober for my dad or my mom or my grandmother, but it has made things a lot better for a lot of people. Like, me being sober is not just about me. anymore, you know, which is something I totally missed because I'd only ever thought about myself. But me being sober has impacted a lot of lives and in a good way now. And it's been important to learn that me drinking also impacted a lot of lives. I thought I didn't affect anybody, you know what I mean? But it did. And my dad today will talk about, and it's like painful to hear, he'll like talk about what it was like to fear that his daughter was going to pass away. You know what I mean? And we have like a great relationship, and that still like sits with him, you know? So all that to say, my work here is not done. And I hope that I can continue on the path of mending the relationships. I try to live in 10, 11, and 12. It's interesting. I heard recently, I don't know how, I've never heard this before. Maybe I wasn't listening. But somebody was talking about how, like, they're not necessarily, like, the maintenance steps. They're, like, the, like, continued growth steps. And I was like, oh, that makes sense, right? Because I don't want to just maintain here. You know what I mean? Like, I want to continue to grow and continue to like see the truth and the light that there is in this world. And imagine if I like was maintaining where I was at year one, you know what I mean? Like life would be a little tough, you know? I'm trying to, you know, continue. I'm still defective, you know? I'll be honest with you, in the last couple of weeks, like I said, my brother is battling with addiction, and it's really scary. Not that, like, all addiction isn't scary. It is. But he's, like, dealing with some not good stuff and not good people, and I'm, like, really scared, you know what I mean? And there's a lot of fear, and what's happening is that I have become really angry. I have became, like, a little angry in meetings, like, I've done this before. Somebody was talking about their dog being sick, and I just wanted to punch her in the face. You know what I mean? I was like, my brother's dying. Like, stop it. You know what I mean? I loved my dog. I cried when he died. I get it. No judgment. But it is coming out in anger. And not, like, the anger that's, like, kind of fun where you, like, feel better than someone because you know that they messed up and, like, you're better than them, so now you get to be angry. This is, like, the anger that, like, I know that there's nothing I can do about the situation, and I just have to continue to do me. And so I know all of that because I try and do a 10-step inventory pretty regularly, and I try and just discuss it with my sponsor. And like for me, 11 has kind of always been like bringing my inventory to God, you know, like I have cultivated relationships in AA talking about my inventory. You know what I mean? That's kind of like the real currency in AA is like, what's your inventory? Here's mine. Oh, we relate on like a not so great level, but we're in it together type thing. So that's kind of like how I started my relationship with God. And hopefully, if there's enough prayer and meditation, that opens myself up, to be useful. I was talking to my sponsor and like, you know, knowing that I'm scared and I'm angry, and, you know, praying and meditating is going to be great. But now is the time where I have to go be useful. You know what I mean? Now is the time where I try and affect the lives that I can change. You know, I can't change the path that my brother is on. He's not interested in what I have to offer. But there are people coming in the rooms that are interested in the solution. And I can do my part in helping them. But the only way I can do that is that if I'm clear of what's like blocking me, you know, this fear, this anger, this like turning my mind off in meetings because I'm annoyed at what you have to say. I might miss the person that needs help. You know what I mean? I might not hear them if I have my blinders on, or see them if I have my blinders on. And you know, if I'm struggling or not, I know that helping another alcoholic is my best option here. You know what I mean? Like nothing reminds me of the nature and my alcoholism, like working with another alcoholic, new or not, you know what I mean, sponsoring them or not, just talking about what it means to be alcoholic and what it means to stay in this room and what that requires reminds me, like when I'm here with you guys, it reminds me what I need to do to stay here. Because like I said, like I have a lot of reasons not to leave here. Did I say that right? Yeah, I have a lot of reasons to stay here, but my mom will always convince me otherwise. And yeah, and I need you guys as much as more than you guys. Yeah, probably more. I need you guys more than you need me. I don't know if there's anything more to say. I honestly I can't believe my life today. I guess I'll give you just a little, some stats of where my life is at. So I was 15 when I was drinking, at the end of my drinking. No school, no sports, no relationships. Today, I just recently, I got married in 2018 to a sober alcoholic who has, 15 years of sobriety. I graduated college. A week before our wedding, it wasn't just mine, he was there too, God was there too. A week before our wedding, I started grad school. I never knew I had like a real insecurity. I thought I was dumb for a really long time. It was mostly because I didn't try, and it's crazy. I applied the like rules of AA meetings to school, and I did so well at the end of my undergrad. Like, I would like sit in the front, ask questions when I didn't know what was going on, actually read the textbook, like thank the professors. Like, they love that stuff, guys. Like, if you thank a professor after the class, and that's all stuff I learned. Like, I didn't get any smarter here, or maybe I did, but you know what I mean? Like, I started grad school in like public health, doing something, it's called epidemiology. I didn't even know what that was. I didn't even know that existed when I got sober, and like I said, like, I got married, it doesn't come with the downs either. Like, my husband and I got engaged in January, and I kid you not, like, 10 days after that, we started having, like, a slew of deaths in our family. Like, my grandmother died 10 days after we got engaged. Then his aunt and uncle died, and then my aunt died. Like, it was nuts. But we, like, all were able to, like, get through it. And, like, everything, I mean, I'm so grateful to be where I'm at today. Like, I couldn't imagine having this life. You know what I mean? Like, it's nuts that I'm, like, just an individual that contributes in any way to the world around me, I'm just grateful that, and it's so crazy to think that, like, AA is responsible for that, Little old AA, has, like, changed my life in such an incredible way that I can't even really describe. So, thank you guys for being here on Super Bowl Sunday. Go whoever you're rooting for.
All right. My name is Michael, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you, Claire, for coming up tonight and sharing your